Today we have the last segment of a year-long exploration with Mason Williams on his career, one of the most fascinating and genius performers I've ever come across. You probably know Classical Gas. Okay, everybody can touch point with that, and they know Mason from that. But throughout the year, if you go to Unreal Bluegrass, you can pick up these interviews under the W in Archives. Mason was a folk performer. He was a bluegrass performer, comedy writer. He wrote songs. He had many, many albums out on his own. Wrote Classical Gas, maybe the most recorded song by so many different people worldwide. I don't know how you keep track of those things, but it's been out there for quite a bit. So we've covered all that territory. We've covered the Smothers Brothers in the past. We've covered the fact that he hired a young, aspiring comedy writer to be the assistant comedy writer to him on the Smothers Brothers, a young man named Steve Martin. So Mason has good taste on a lot of things. Fascinating individual. The last segment today, we will talk about post-Classical Gas being a hit, some river music that he does, some live concerts that he does, parodies, and also he has an alter ego by the name of Up Close Glimpse, how he pronounces it. It looks like Up Close Glimpse, but you'd have to understand Mason's mind a little bit to figure out why he added accents and whatnot to get it to sound like that. So here's what I would ask you to do. After today's show, go back, re-listen to the other portions of Mason's conversation on the unrealbluegrass.com. Final entry of, it's been a serial. It's just like those podcasts that everybody just sits around and listens to. There, we're back talking to Mason Williams again. We're up to the point, Mason, where we just did play, as we left off the last part, a couple tunes from, I think this project is very near and dear to you. You were assigned the task, and it winds up being this times and rivers flowing, but you've performed this live in different, right? You've performed this live in different versions, and
I played about 60 of those shows, and most of them were campaigns to sort of save American, you know, various streams around the country, mostly here in the Northwest, but they were to keep dams off of them or to improve the water quality. But it was a way to have music become the focal point for the boaters and the fly fishermen and all the other people involved in the health of the rivers, I guess you would say. And so I got to explore, like I say, every kind of music you can imagine in the process of doing this. I guess I collected a kind of over 1,000 river songs, and had about 50 of them in the show. You sort of had to pick ones that people were familiar with or that made a point. Sometimes it was not something that people were that familiar with, but made an interesting point. And that was one of the things I realized in the process of doing this, that in the beginning, the river songs were about people being on the river, actually singing about the river. And then at the turn of the century, when pop music came around, people wanted to write songs about subjects that the general public was enamored of, and rivers were a big part of all those songs that were written. And the songs were written just so that people could be part of the music business, but river was the subject, you know, on banks of the Wabash far away and down by the Old Mill Stream. Those were all sort of Tin Pan Alley Day songs, but the river was the subject. The Beautiful Ohio, I mean, there were so many of them. And then later on, the river became a metaphor for the flow of time. So it was like Bob Dylan and different people were embracing the concept of the river as a flow of time. And it was interesting to see the river move through these various periods of how the people were regarding the river in terms of the work they were creating.
Well, I mean, just from this recorded, I mean, of course, I've not seen the live show, and you pick and choose different tunes, but you go all the way up to Randy Newman singing about the the river burning, and you also do Moon River and Cool Water. I mean, those. So you really had a broad approach to singing about water and time.
Yeah, and it was the idea that the river had a role, a prominent role in all these periods in history, and that every artist, whether it was a painter or a songwriter or a composer or a choreographer, you name it, they all had something in their works that was about the river. I had one teacher tell me, he says, the three great themes in life are birth, death, and the river.
Okay.
I said, boy, that's it, because you're born, you die, and then there's this flow of time in between.
It really is about time, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what
you're saying? Yeah, it really is. And there's so many analogies that I thought was, there's a lot of correlations between music and water. They're quite a bit alike. They speak well of one another.
And
both flow through time, purifying themselves as they go.
Yeah. Right. The as much effort and emotion as you put into conveying this whole time and the water connection, on the inside, you're in a tux standing in the middle of what appears to be a stream.
I'm sorry?
You're on the inside on the inside of this album, because I don't want to ever let you go without recognizing that you still have this sense of humor.
Oh, yeah, that's a stream up by where I live. That's Salmon Creek, it's called.
So Mason Williams and this touching, moving theme of time and life and water. In the inside, you open it up, and there you are standing in a tux in the middle of a stream.
Yeah, I'm actually standing in the river.
No, I know. I could tell. I didn't think it was
funny. Yeah, it's not a photo what do you call it, Dan?
It's not photoshopped. Yeah.
Yeah, not a photoshop.
Yeah.
And of course, I always wondered if we couldn't possibly have the whole band be in a river. You know, the piano and submerged in the river, and the cello, and all.
Oh, sure. Why not?
Sitting in the water in some form or another. Although most people wouldn't want their cello to get wet.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But even here's the thing, Mason, and we could go on and on, and I'm taking so much of your day. You're so generous with your time.
Oh, no problem.
There's so many more albums we could go through, and you're still doing the bluegrass. I have relatively recent bluegrass things you've done. I played from this live 2002 recording that you recorded live. I played Pibble Fits a Rag, and I played the Frontier Drummer's bit, and I played all the other serious music, and so you're still doing bluegrass, and you're also will still do the orchestrated stuff, and you're very active in everything that you've come across in your life.
Well, I'm not performing anymore. I kind of gave that up. You reach a point where if you don't have a manager and an agent, you're not a draw anymore.
Yeah.
And so I do well here where I live, since people know, you know, that I'm here, but...
They say, let's go see the guy that stood in the creek.
Huh?
They say, let's go see the guy that was in the creek in the tuxedo. He's playing down
the
street.
And so you basically reach a point where if you don't promote yourself and don't have the mechanisms for gigs that make it worthwhile, you just have to give it up. And I played a Christmas show this last year, 2014, and that was probably the end of it. So, but I loved Christmas because, once again, you're sort of updating yourself with history. You're becoming part of history. And so all of those classic songs, you know, God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, right on up to current things, you know. Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, the Christmas song. So
you do a version of Green Sleeves, and everybody always has, you know, parenthetical Green Sleeves, but you call What Tune Is This instead of...
Oh, that was because it was based on What Child Is This.
Right.
That was the takeoff on that Christmas album,
right.
Anyway. And I should tell you the real story about Green Sleeves. I don't know if you want to put this on the air.
I want to do it, yes. I want to do it.
Okay. The Greensleeves were the prostitutes during the Crusades, and they were called Greensleeves because they had green grass stains on their elbows from sort of servicing the the troops.
This is nothing. I've never heard this before. I've never heard this.
Yeah, this is the truth. And the song Greensleeves is about a crusade soldier falling in love with this prostitute. Alas, my love, you do me wrong to cast me off discourteously, for I have loved you so long, delighting in thy company. So in other words, the whole song is about she's a Greensleeves prostitute, and he's falling in love with her. Mm-hmm. She's saying, nope, this is my line of work, and you've got yours, and so that's it.
How did you find that? I've never heard that before. Of course, I haven't researched
it. Well, I don't exactly.
You know?
I couldn't exactly tell that in my Christmas show.
Well, that's true.
That's the real story about it, what a Greensleeves.
I believe you. As I told you earlier, anything you go with, I'm going to accept. So you can you can cast and catch and reel me in. I won't know for days.
So, but and also, I could add this, that back in the early days, you know, I guess in the 14th, 15th, 16th century, the common people were not allowed to participate in religious ceremony. In other words, because it was in Latin and they had the music, and the people wanted to get emotionally involved in the religious services, and but they weren't allowed to do that. So, and they couldn't sing the music that was in the services, so they would make up their own songs that they would sing sort of with each other, you know, for religious things. And it didn't matter where a melody came from. If they liked it, they'd use it. There weren't any copyright issues back then. And so that's how the melody of Greensleeves became the melody for What Child Is This? Someone liked that melody and just decided to adapt it for what was a, the, you might say, religious anthem of the common folk.
And not unlike, Mason, what you did in junior high school, where you took a song and rewrote your own words because you liked the melody.
Yeah. I was a big fan of Woody Guthrie because he was always borrowing melodies and writing new lyrics to them. And Pete Seeger was like that to a certain degree. He just said, you know, you want to identify with what the people already know. Excuse me. And so it's great if you take a melody that they have familiar with and put new lyrics to it and gives it a fresh start.
Wow.
I used to do political things like that. I wrote most of the parodies on the Smothers Brothers show because I had learned this 300 folk songs, and so was pretty good at mixing lyrics up. And I don't know if I sent you that. Those were the Smobro days or not, but that was telling the Smothers Brothers' whole story, and those were the days. Once upon a time, we were on TV. Every Sunday night, we knocked them dead. We stirred up trouble, so the networks fired us. I guess that it was something that we said. Those were those days, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And so I was really impressed with that whole idea that you would sort of adapt a familiar song for a current issue and whatnot. Of Time and Rivers Flowing is from the Praetorius Hymn, 1596, and Pete Seeger put those new lyrics to it, and boy, they are powerful. So that's a prime, you might want to play that. That's a prime example of what we're talking about.
I'm going to play that at the end of this segment.
And somebody in Italy is just using that as that my version of that in a special they're making about Pete Seeger, and they wanted to put that song in it. And Pete's version of it was quite different than the. I stayed closer to the original Praetorius Hymn for my arrangement, and so you know you're constantly incorporating and adapting all this. Music of the ages into the moment. The country of the mind, that was a good concept that I got from a local writer here named Barry Lopez, who's a great writer, and he kept talking about that not only do is there a country that you live in, but you have a picture of that country in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so all this music flows through the country of the mind, same as the rivers flow through the country of the land. You start to see that it is the one and all and the all in one. Everything.
We talked a little bit about your visual art, and I'm going to play that that version of Time and Rivers Flowing as this segment ends, which will probably be the last segment that we do of this process. But,
okay.
But the visual art, you've always been involved in illustrations, or at least the I don't mean the drawing so much, but maybe, but also the presentation of your albums and different artworks.
Ed Thrasher was the guy that did all the albums for Warner Brothers, and he was enamored of my relationship with Ed Ruscha and these other artists that were there in L.A. I was big friends with the art crowd. Joe Goods, another painter from Oklahoma who's famous, but Ed in particular is really famous. So I had a couple of covers that were up for Grammys, and Ed and I had a great time because we would get together and kick around art ideas, and he liked the idea that not only was I involved in the music, but the graphic aspects of it. And Ed was really a great album designer. Boy, if you looked up his career, you'd see every album you ever thought of was one of his creations.
Tell me about this visual artist. You have an alter ego.
The what?
You have an alter ego.
Upklos Glimpse?
Yes, Upklos. I was going to let you pronounce it because you put the umlaut above the U.
Yeah, it's Upklos Glimpse.
Okay.
So, Upklos Glimpse was a concept, a comedy concept that I came up with where he basically maintains that he's an abstract artist and that his works are not abstract. His works are real, but he's the abstract artist. And I have to get that. I can grab it, but I had a good time in sort of remembering all those art forum magazines I read. Ed Ruscha and I used to lay out Art Forum magazine together.
Oh, okay.
And we would, I'd go up and... I'd go up and help him lay out pages, and I had those sort of had a good eye and chops for how to assemble the things. And you know, back in those old days, it was PMTs; it wasn't computer oriented. You were actually cutting up text and gluing it on pages. So, and we listened to jazz radio and different things. And I remember telling Ed, I said, "Let's take the cover, and it's called Art Forum, F-O-R apostrophe E-M.
I said,
"No, I can't do that. We'll get fired." Or I'll get fired. And he wasn't the successful artist yet that he was. And all those, like I say, you're a cross-pollinization of all those interests. And I would put a lot of art concepts into my songs as well. I would experiment with borrowing my song Sunflower, for example, is based on the word cantilever. I named it Sunflower because it was part of that movie that I made about drawing a sunflower in the sky with the sun as the blossom and the skywriter could stem and leaves beneath it. And
That's on the music album.
Yeah, there's a picture of that on there. Mm-hmm. And I know it's on the first one, the phonograph record.
Well, the song, the song I have on music, let's see, on phonograph.
It might be there, too.
It is. It's the last cut on Sunflower. You're correct.
Oh, Sunflower, yeah. Mm-hmm. The cut. Yeah, and that's the one to play, I think.
Okay.
It's better than the first one.
Okay.
And but I told Ed about this. I said, I'm using words to create melodies. So I said, Sunflower is me taking a word and ascribing note values to the words. And a C was a C, and an A was an A, and then, you know, we went on down the alphabet and became sharps and flats, whatever. So the melody for Sunflower is this. C-A-N-T-I-L-E-V-E-R. So I thought, okay, Why should I struggle to create melodies when words are already structures for melodies, and all you have to do is give the letters in the word
values.
Note values,
yeah.
And they will create melodies. And
that's unbelievable. Now, that did not
occur. And I told this to Ann. He says, that is a concept called chance composition, where you create a system that creates something for you that you would never think of. And I used it for poetry, too. And the one in poetry was pretty interesting in that I would take a nursery rhyme, and I said, okay, I'm going to look up the word in the dictionary, and I'm going to count down 50 words and insert that word in it. And you had to keep the structure. You kept the ins and ands and buts and the prepositions and the articles. But you change the adjectives and adverbs. And here's an example. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, how does your garden grow with, something in a row. I can't remember the original. Mary, Mary, quite tragic, with cockle shells, silver bells in there, something like that.
Yeah.
Maidens in a row. So here is a poem that this system I came up with wrote. Blind. Mars, Mars, regal eagle, how does the war progress? With spitfires and dry death and ramshackle minds all in a self-destruction. So, who needs me? You've got the language and you've got a formula, and all you got to do is crank them out.
And you're leaving this on a really upbeat note, Mason, because now we're in the Mars and destruction mode. Oh, man.
Well, I was in the Navy.
Okay.
But anyway, I didn't pick the words.
I understand.
I picked the form, and I picked the idea of substituting the adverbs and adjectives and to create thoughts I would never think of. And so it was not only thoughts I would never think of, but melodies as well. So, so borrowing all of these sort of art forms to apply to your work was really interesting. And, you could say that, what a mashup is, right?
Yes, sir.
A mashup is a collage.
Mm-hmm.
It's two things at the same time, pasted on top of each other.
Becomes surreal. It's surreal art.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you're sort of, so you're borrowing all of these concepts from one form and applying them to another. And I have a lot of ideas I never got to explore, but...
The great thing is now, we're going to play this, we're going to break this down into parts, we're going to play different interviews and different sections, which is how we've done it, and everyone will get to experience a little bit of a glimpse into the mind of Mason Williams. I have absolutely, I know I've taken a big chunk out of your time, out of your day.
That's okay.
I hope it's been enjoyable. I hope that we've covered enough things that you feel like it's been worth your time.
Time is definitely chunky. Yeah, and it's hunky-dory when you get to do some chunks that you enjoy.
Well, listen, I appreciate this so much, Mason. I'll let you know when these things air. There's probably going to be.
I have to pay you a compliment.
Okay,
you
go.
You bring out the best in me, and boy, that is something. You make me remember things I haven't thought about in a long time.
Oh, good.
I hope I've expressed them well. But anyway, I thank you for. Leading me through it all.
Well, thank you.
Such a nice way.
Thank you so much. Mason Williams, it's been an absolute, it's been a classical gas. Hey, there you go. I get to tie loop it around.
All right.
Listen, man, take care, and I hope to get to meet you someday. When I was thinking about this interview, I thought, gosh, if I could sit with him and do this and have all of my material, it would be so much fun, but I'll have to find a way to actually meet up with you at some point.
Okay, I'm here.
All right, thanks, Mason.
I know you're there. So
I'm here. You're
not
where
that
I'm...
far apart.
Not really.
All my family was originally from Kentucky.
They were.
Yeah, the Williams were Tennessee and Kentucky.
Why did they leave?
Well, they went to Louisiana. Why, I don't know, but their name was Nations and Murphy. That's pretty Irish.
Yeah.
And Carruthers, pretty English. I'm sort of a mix of all of them, but that. you know, I had an aunt that was into all that, tracing all that stuff, and boy, the roots of a lot of it are Kentucky and Tennessee.
Well, we will meet in the middle. I'm supposed to meet Byron Berline some point in Oklahoma City. So maybe we can meet in the middle.
Byron is such a great person.
Oh, what a blast. He was on Star Trek. We talked about him being on Star Trek, playing the fiddle.
Okay, down the road, we'll link
up. All right, thanks, Mason. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.